When I arrived at the airport, I had a unique experience in that this is the first time I've arrived in an airport in a long, long time where a majority of the people had an accent similar to my own. I actually grew up in Texas, and I almost went to the University of Texas, which my father did go to and graduated from the law school in 1937, which is not necessarily a happy time to graduate from law school, but it was the best he could do. So what I'm going to talk about today is what we call a superstar model, and it's about it's actually genuinely motivated by some empirical data. A great number of us have worked on random graph models, which we've thought about largely from a priori reasons. Erdős and Renyi began thinking about their model for random graphs long before anybody had particularly thought about how one might apply such random graph and graph evolutions. It turns out that it was a remarkably fecund idea that had many implications for the world, but that wasn't really their initial motivation. Here we're beginning honestly with a piece of data. So I'm going to be talking about a class of graphs, which we call retweet graphs. By the way, how many people here are users of Twitter? Follow. You know, you say follow real Donald Trump. The names of Twitter feeds tend to have funny names. Like if you follow the soccer team Madrid, then it's Real Madrid. Maybe that's Real Madrid. I'm a little confused about the two etymologies. This is joint work with Shankar Bamidi. With Tawhid Zaman, and they're genuine members of the Twitter generation. If you want to find a covariate for use of Twitter, then having white hair is probably not one of the leading indicia. So what's a tweet and what's a retweet? A tweet is a message sent out through the Twitter network, which is then ostensibly read by the people who signed up to follow the tweets of that individual person. A retweet is like a forwarded message. It's a message which takes the originating tweet, typically adds a comment to it like, for sure, or no kidding, or duh, and then sends that to the subscribers to that second person's list of tweet receivers. Now, it's probably less august than we're used to in our own discipline, but you can kind of think of as a retweet as a citation. Okay, so citations, we have thought about at various times as a measure of the importance of the person who's being cited, and the same way you can think of a retweet as a measure of the importance or influence of the individual who's being retweeted. So here is a graph. It's shows up much better on my screen than it does on that one, but that's life, and you can tell that there exists in the middle here a very large star-like object and then other little objects that are less star-like. Let me tell you how this graph is constructed. First, you begin with the retweet graph. That is, you draw an edge between any pair of individuals such that A tweets is retweeted by B. It's not directed. This won't a priori give you a tree. Well, first off, it's not, a priori won't even give you a connected graph. But like many empirical graphs, it has a giant component. So now restrict your attention to the giant component. And if you look at the total, if it were a tree, of course, then the number of edges would be n minus 1 if n was the number of elements of the giant component. Well, the thing is, these are typically not exactly trees, but they will have from an excess number of edges of about 0.5% to sometimes 3 or 4%. So they're very tree-like. So We're eventually going to just study a tree model, and it'd be interesting to know how you can incorporate these additional vertices. Now here, by restricting from the original retweak graph to the trees, which we'll study, I've thrown away... Yes?
Could you repeat how this graph is constructed?
Yeah. Yeah, the initial graph is this. Draw an edge between vertices A and B if B has retweeted a message from A, okay? Although we don't regard them as directed graphs. This graph may have cycles, but it's very tree-like. The giant component is very tree-like. So let's tell you exactly how you construct this guy. You take a keyword. In this case, the keyword was BET awards, and that was the data. In this case, was from 2010. This is an award ceremony of the Black Entertainment Network, and it happened at this particular awards banquet. Lady Gaga was receiving a prize, and then from a four-hour period. This was actually about a six-hour period. All of the tweets in the Twitterverse that contained the words BET awards were put into the data set, and then the retweet graph was constructed from that data. And that's typical for, I'm going to describe 13 other retweet graphs, and that's typical of how they are constructed. Okay, so we see something that looks like a tree. Now here are some others. We did 13 events. I won't read all of the 13 events, but let me give you some sense of them. Many of them are sports events. Some of you know that I'm not a very sports person. For a Texan, I'm probably unique in the sense that I've never been to a professional sporting event. Not a professional baseball game, not a professional football game, not a professional basketball game. Never been to one in my life. And, of course, at this point, I have a record to maintain, so I'm not tempted to go to any. But many of these graphs were constructed by, say, the Brazil versus Netherlands soccer match from the 2010 World Cup. And the keywords in that case we used two, Brazil and Netherlands. So the first thing we did was collected within a four-hour window containing the match. We took all of the messages that contained either Brazil or Netherlands. Now, some of those may have been Netherlands decreases the discount rate from 1.5% to 1.2%. So obviously that would be, you may have some junk in there, but that would no doubt be fleshed out in a pretty natural way. And so there are a bunch of them. The majority of them are about sports. One which kind of bookends this is interesting. It was from the UN imposing sanctions on Iran in 2010. The keyword there is Iran. That kind of bookends it because now those sanctions are being released. So, as I mentioned before, they're empirically very tree-like. There's one giant component which we model. And we take them as directed. And that's where we began, and that's our empirical story. And we're sticking to it. So who was the superstar? Well, as you might guess, Lady Gaga was herself the superstar. And there are two other individuals there whose pictures you can't quite see. And it's a bit of a comment upon American culture, perhaps, that one of the young men who's to the left of Lady Gaga is Justin Bieber, whoever he is. And the young woman to the right of Lady Gaga is Kim Kardashian, whoever she is. So this is a typical sort of structure and leads to interpretability. So many of you might think if you want to have a model, an a priori model for a giant tree, it's almost automatic these days to think about the preferential attachment model. In the preferential attachment model, you grow the trees in a process-like way where a new vertex is attached to an old vertex in proportion to the degree of that previously observed vertex. Now, what one finds here, of course, in the 13 examples that we studied empirically, was that we actually have one vertex that seems to grow linearly as degree grows linearly. So max degree is P times N. Well, that's just not a phenomenon that you can capture with a plain vanilla preferential attachment model. Preferential attachment models come in a number of varieties, but if you just think about that most plain vanilla one, which I mentioned, then its max degree grows sublinearly in the number of vertices. As a matter of fact, in that simplest case, it grows like the square root of n. So here we observed in our data sets what the corresponding degrees were, and we find that they're quite large compared to what you would get with preferential attachment. So there's some desire to find some other model. And we really began empirically and searched for lots of things, and we had initially hoped, and I'll throw this out as an advanced problem for you to contemplate, we would have hoped to see the superstar evolve kind of naturally in the process. When eventually we got a model which we could analyze, and I think you'll find the subsequent analysis has some interesting features, when we got a thing that we could analyze, we ended up having to say, no, we need to say there's a superstar from the get-go. And to some extent, that was anticipatable from the BET data, because in that case, Lady Gaga is getting the prize. It's about her to some substantial extent. And so that she would be the superstar in that data was a natural enough phenomenon. Okay, so how does our model go? I've drawn a triangle here, but let me draw the two pieces. The edge from vertex V0 to V1 is really there. The other two edges I should have drawn, I'm a bit Beamer handicapped. I wanted to have dotted lines there, but it was simply beyond my computational capacity. So imagine the two lines from the left-hand side to be dotted, so putative lines. So when the first vertex shows up, there's a V0, which is the superstar, the a priori superstar, and then V1 is attached to the a priori superstar. Then along comes V2, and V2 has two possibilities. One possibility in the not dotted but should be dotted line is that it's attached to the superstar with probability P. And in this case, with probability 1 minus P2, it's attached to the other part of the tree with probability 1 minus P, and then in proportion to the degrees of the vertices. So in other words, a newly arriving vertex is attached to the superstar with probability P, and alternatively, it's attached according to the preferential attachment rule to the vestigial vertices of the tree. So that's our guy. And the interesting thing about this is that there's only one model parameter. And it's obvious how you estimate that model parameter. You just count look at the degree of the superstar, the max degree. One simple, and it's a simple model. It has a couple of empirical benefits. And it also turns out to be tractable, but not as tractable as you might think. So, for example, since I've described it in two pieces, you might say that, well, the max degree of the non-superstar vertices must be behaving like the max degree in a preferential attachment model. I certainly believe that for a little while, but it's not true. You might think that the distribution of the degrees, the asymptotic frequencies, say, of vertices that have a degree k, when k is equal to 3, 4, 5, would be the same as the preferential attachment model. Again, not true. There exists a power law, but the powers actually decay more rapidly than they do for the preferential attachment rule, which means there's more mass up front than in preferential attachment, so less diffuse. But we'll get to that.
When you say with probably 1 minus P, it does preferential attachment to all of the vertices other than
not including the superstar. Okay. The preferential attachment to the non-superstars. Well, it's one of Holmes's rules was you should always prove something in a talk, so let's prove something that's completely trivial. Obviously, it's baked into the cake that the degree of the superstar is p. There's really nothing there to prove that the asymptotic degree is asymptotic to n times p. So that's just baked in the cake. But interestingly enough, that's really all that's baked in the cake. The rest has to be figured out, and it's not as directly figured out as one might guess. P predicts all the other features of the graph, and that makes it somewhat testable. I don't want to. In case there's any honest empiricist here, if there are any honest empiricists, I don't want to be held to too high a standard about the testability, but you'll see what I mean in a second. Now, here's something that's more interesting. If you look at deg max of G, the large component of the graph that we've the component of this graph that we've just described. Look at the maximum of that guy. That grows like into the gamma. Okay, so this limit. It's a little bit subtle here in that the limit is not a constant in this case, but like in many cases where you invoke the martingale theory, the limiting constant, limit is not a constant but rather a random variable. So the maximal degree of this, other than a superstar, is of course little o, and it's also behaving like a nice power law. So the max degree of the non-superstars behaves a power law, and you see if we let p equal zero, if p equals zero, of course you're back in the land of preferential attachment model, so you'd have to get what we know for the preferential attachment model, which is max degree behaves asymptotically like into the one half. So that's how that works, and so we see that if you study the degree of the superstar, you get a prediction about the rate of growth of the maximal non-superstar, just forced to you. Okay. Now, it turns out that with the other degrees also have a law that can be expressed. So let's look at this. So f of k counts the number or fraction of vertices that have degree k in the graph that we've constructed. And it turns out that you can there's a probability mass function that I've written there explicitly, so k runs from 1 to infinity. And we have that with probability 1 that the observed degrees converge to that probability mass function. And this is kind of got a couple of layers on it. We've got a convergence of probability 1 to a probability mass function. So this is describing something very specific about the nature of the graph. Now, this product might look ugly, but you know that the thing on the right-hand side is a little bit of a variation on the gamma function, and we've got a k minus 1 there, which is a gamma function thing. So you can actually work out that this is asymptotic to k to the minus beta, where beta is 3 plus p divided by 1 minus p. So it's p plus an odds ratio. And again, if p was equal to 0, we would have preferential attachment, and we would know that the corresponding decay would be like one on n cubed. Okay. So here's kind of a summary of the facts. Superstar degree, we have asymptotic to a constant times n. Preferential attachment, well, there's no analogous superstar. Maximal non-superstar degree exponent is a number which is larger than a half, and compared to what we always get a half. It's also monotone in P. And the degree distribution satisfies a power law, and it does in this other case also. By the way, I know that some of us get paid by statistics departments, although we don't do much statistics. But there actually is an interesting statistical question here, and that how can you judge the goodness or appropriateness of a power law approximation to an observed frequency, say, of vertex degrees. There are a million papers out there that make some choice and run with it, but I couldn't find anything that was really principled, and anything it would even be nice to have a survey paper that at least reviewed all of the different approaches that people have taken. I'll describe some here in this paper a little bit later that I was more enthusiastic about when I did them than I am now. So it was a sort of a creator's remorse of some sort. But we'll see that when we get to it. So, and in fact, we're right at it. So let's look at the actual data. So let's let G and hat be the observed graph constructed in this way as I described for the 13 data sets. And consider the observed frequencies of the empirical retweak graph. And then look at the law that's given by the superstar model, the asymptotic law for the superstar model. And we would expect some fit of observed versus predicted. Now, if you say observed versus predicted to a statistician, well, not a statistician really, but to a statistics student, his foot starts to jerk like this, and he thinks about the chi-squared goodness of fit test, where you look at observed minus expected divided by observed and square them and add them up. Well, that wouldn't work here. But let's see what we can try. So here, of course, we, in order to get this fit, we do have to estimate one parameter, and this is also done in the theory of chi-squared statistics. So we'll estimate the p-hat just by the observed superstar degree divided by n. And as our straw man, you know, you always have to have a straw man, somebody to kick down the road, and we'll take this preferential attachment as our straw man. So here are the observed degrees. So one has to do with, I think LeBron is a baseball player. Baseball player, yes. And at one point, there was some contract negotiation, and this was the data set created from that. This is Brazil versus Portugal. Football match. This is Federer, a tennis player. In each case here, we've estimated the P, so there wasn't such a tremendously large superstar in the LeBron data set. There was a more notable superstar for the Brazil-Portugal match and also for the Federer event. And BET had the largest of the observed P hats that we observed. Okay. And what we see is all our straw man, this line, that's the preferential attachment line, starts out at the right place, so this is not accountable for just the P, but we see pretty, well, again, we don't really have a tool to say what's a good fit, what's a bad fit, and of course there's some dispute there about how you might want to measure this scale. We've got basically a logarithmic scale here where powers of 10 are equally spaced. Similarly, we have this phenomenon here. Large number of all the same, essentially the same degrees there. Don't know why that happened. And then the LeBron data set, we've got a little bit more dispersion as you might expect toward the end. So there's something that's being captured here. It's not perfect, and we don't really have a tool for getting quantitative about that. So here's the thing you can look at. It's a little bit motivated by chi-squared notions. Yeah?
Would you put it back?
Yeah.
The previous one?
Yeah.
So in the left-right corner, you see all of these dots at the same time.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you have one observed case of that degree?
I'll bet it does, and I just noticed that as I was putting it up. There's a reason I hurried myself along a bit, but I'm glad to be brought back. It probably is that they're all just ones there.
Yeah. It might be better to look at the tail probability.
I think you're right.
Because that tends to have less variability and it tends to be a bit smoother.
Yes, I agree with that. And in fact, in the analysis, we end up, it's very natural in the analysis to study the tail probabilities. And in fact, we get to this probability mass function by taking the difference of the shift by one tail probabilities. And it's just by a miracle that you get that nice formula after you do that type of shift. So a pleasant piece of arithmetic that comes up. Yes. So as an attempt to get some notion of relative error, we looked at this object, and again you can think of alternatives. This was kind of echoed by the theory of chi-squared statistics. So here we've got the observed, here's a superstar model with the estimated parameter divided by, again, the estimated frequencies, theoretical frequencies. So this is absolute observed minus expected divided by expected. And the same thing on the right-hand side. Not quite expected because P is estimated. But there's a custom to that. Well, we don't really have a parameter. There's not really a parametric model here, so it's kind of hard to. I mean, there's the P, of which we have a parametric model, but for these objects here, well, I guess we could just say that object itself is a P. So you guess you could build in some likelihood here, but we didn't examine that. We didn't examine that.
If you would know when the tweets would come in, then you could build a likelihood. Observe data,
yes.
P, and maximize it over P, but it might be terrible.
Yeah, well, that's these are kind of approximately time ordered. No, there is a time stamp on these things, so we can examine them.
And you know the conditional probability of the attachment.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And then you might just take the product of those.
Yeah.
That will actually give you the likelihood of the data.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. That's an interesting thing to explore. And this is pretty crude, and I was feeling a little insecure about it to begin with, but we'll forge ahead. So here's just the net effect of that computation. So when we look at these relative errors for each of the here's our 13 events. This is just for the degree one. So this is the frequency of degree one. That's outside of the super. Of course, superstar has big degree, and this is relative error. Again, the relative errors are systematically larger for the preferential attachment model. Let me see. I've got actually a better. Couldn't get all my labels on there, so let me tell you a little bit more about this label data. So the horizontal axis is events. We have 13 events. Lady Gaga is number 6 in this. And what else should I say about this? This is each one of these is the relative error of a preferential attachment versus the superstar. So that's complete in that case. So in this kind of crude empirical analysis, which doesn't put any p-values on anything, we see that there's a sense in which the superstar model does better. Okay. Interesting thing is that the superstar model gives you a mathematical link between the superstar degree and the degree distribution of the non-superstars. This was unexpected by us. Originally, I thought this was just going to be a very easy knock it off model in order to get ourselves started. It turned out to be more subtle because the whole superstar construction ends up influencing the nature of the degrees. Okay. So I guess the real bottom line is here, how do you analyze a superstar model? And this is the second part of the title, which is surgery on multi-type branching processes. I know this trick is familiar to some of you. David, I think, may have been there near the invention of these things, but it's a very nice trick, which is in the domain of news you can use. There's plenty of technology out there for analyzing branching processes, and by doing a little surgery on them, you can end up with some interesting things. So the proto idea, of course, is that anytime you have you're talking about trees, then it's necessary to... almost forced into thinking about branching processes. Now, when birth rates depend upon the number of children, there exists a very nice relationship between branching processes and preferential attachment model. I'll get to that in just a second. Now, if you have a typical yield process or a yield process that depends upon some feature of the tree for its birth rates, then you don't, it doesn't come with a superstar. So you have to find a construction that creates a superstar. But yield processes are yield processes with multi-types. Multi-types end up making things complicated, and the literature I find a little muddy because it's less focused on nice concrete cases where your multi-types are just two, say red and blue, and where people look things at perhaps a little bit more abstract level than is most useful. But still, the literature is there. You can work yourself through it, and it's got a lot of powerful insights. Turns out the analysis of this wasn't easy, even though the model was pretty easy. And the news you can use is that we do have a concrete connection between yield processes and surgery on multi-type branching processes really do give you a useful toolkit for building lots of other types of models. So how do we do it? So let's just start with the possibility of having vertices of two types, red and blue. And initially, we're not going to have any superstar at all, just a two-type branching process. Each vertex gives birth to vertices according to a non-homogeneous Poisson process, and it has rate which is proportional to the number of blue children. Red children don't influence the birth rate of a vertex. At birth, each vertex is painted red with probability P and painted blue with probability 1 minus P. So let's look at how this goes. So we're going to look at a particular time T, and the number of blue vertices, so this is children sub B, blue children. This guy has one blue child, so at time T, the number of blue children of V is equal to 1. If we go over here to V3, then tau 3 is the time of the birth of the third vertex. So this is the amount of time after the birth of that third vertex. And we look at CB of that vertex, this amount after its birth, and we see that it has no children. Okay. Now there's a kind of interesting shift here. It takes a while to sort out what really should be the proper notation. But in order to get recurrences that work nicely, you kind of want time to begin for each vertex with its own birth. So below each vertex, you're looking at everything in the scale of after its birth. Now, what do we do with these guys? Well, we're going to introduce another vertex, V0, which one we started with 1, and V0, and then we're going to redirect all of those red vertices to be attached to the V0 vertex, and we'll keep the others intact. So let's do that. So here's a superstar. Again, I couldn't do dotted lines, so it looks like I've got a thing here. So what's happened is this line stays, that's a dark line. This guy is just attached to the superstar. This guy's attached to the superstar. This line is deleted. This directed line is deleted. This directed line is deleted. This is attached to the superstar, and this is attached to the vertex. So that's the construction of the superstar model and relating it to a type of Yule process. Now here's the claim. I gave you at the beginning a description that says along comes a neutral vertex, it's attached to the superstar with probability P, with probability 1 minus P, it's attached according to preferential attachment. Now I've given another construction which begins with a two-type branching process, constructs the branching process up to a specified time, say the time of arrival of the seventh vertex, and then uses the colors to create another type of graph, another type of tree. So we have to see that these two things are actually the same. When you start off, you start off with the triviality of just V1 being attached to V0. So they certainly are the same. So here is the construction graph after the arrival of the nth element of, to the two-type branching process. And here is the superstar graph with the original description on n plus 1 vertices, the original description being vertices are attached to the superstar probability P, otherwise a preferential attachment to the others. And you need to show that these two guys have the same evolution. Well, the probability that a vertex is red is the same thing of being born red is the same thing as being attached to the superstar. So that part is true. And so then we have to think about the evolution of the others. But since births are proportional to the number of vertices, the rate at which the branching process takes place gives you exactly the same probabilistic dynamics as preferential attachment. Because if you have K blue children, you're going to have a birth at that place at a rate that's proportional to K compared to one that just has two children, where the birth rate would be proportional to two. So you have exactly the same dynamics as with preferential attachment. So here we see the two pictures at once. So this is after the time of the sixth vertex. So there are six vertices here. Introduce V0. V1 is attached to V0. The reds are attached to V0. The little reds, that's a red, it's attached to V0. And blues retain their previous attachment. So that's the construction from the two-part branching process. How am I doing on time?
13 minutes.
Good. I'm used to 50-minute hours, so we'll give ourselves a little space here. Here's a little bit of... There's not really a need for a full computation on this. The rule I gave you actually explains the full story. So the probability that a new blue is attached to VK, given the history, is just given by exactly the same ratio as one would have expected before. Let's look at the non-superstar degree. In this case, there exists a strictly positive, a random variable such that one has this limit. Now, this is a classical branching processes to Martingale limit type of analysis. So the theory of branching processes is completely covered with such analyses. No reason to repeat that arithmetic. So I'll go past this guy. So let's look at what we learned from this. This is an example of a very simple but honest variation of a model. And I have two that I always keep in mind. You probably know the Neyman-Scott model for point processes, which is a model for such things as dandelions growing in your lawn. And what you observe about dandelions is they tend to grow in little clumps. And if you wanted to build a model for this, anybody in his right mind would say, well, let's first just have a Poisson process, put down a Poisson process. And now, to each vertex, we're going to attach another Poisson process, we'll say that has intensity that falls off like a normal distribution around our original point process point. Then you take a sample of Poisson size from that population, and you do that for each of the points in the original process. This gives you something with clumps. And if you were to assign this to if you were to say to a class of students, oh, tomorrow, students, please come to class with a model for a clumping point process. 85% of the class would come up with this model, despite the fact that there are 1,000 papers that now cite this work of Neyman and Scott. So you can come up with some pretty good stuff by simple models. My other favorite example is the Garch model. Very interesting thing about financial time series is that returns have essentially no predictability. So if you look at the returns and you attempt to fit, say, an AR1 model, that you get highly non-significant AR1 coefficients. On the other hand, if you look at squared returns and you do the same calculation, you get monstrously significant AR1 coefficient. So squared returns are highly predictable. Returns are highly unpredictable. So that says that there's something predictable about volatility. And again, if you ask your students, tomorrow come back to class with some variation on the AR1 model where you allow some predictability, changing volatility, and maybe some predictability of volatility. Half of your students would have come back with the ARCH model. Half of your students would have come back with the GARCH model. The ARCH model doesn't work, but it won the Nobel Prize. And the GARCH model does work. It works amazingly well, but because it came second, it didn't win the Nobel Prize. So you can get some pretty simple stuff out of elementary models. Now, nature of the difficulty, this is actually harder than I thought. I thought that the original superstar model I thought was so simple that it would just give us a base case off of which to frame and consider other models. It turned out to be require pretty sustained analysis, and thankfully Shankar was a master due to his tutelage from David Aldous about calculations and branching processes, and he provided a lot of that technology. There are variations on this that we also consider. There's some simple variations just based on the mathematics. So if instead of having things proportional to the number of vertices, number of, say, blue children, you can have them proportional to the number of blue children plus an arbitrary positive constant. And that turns out to be analyzable by the same technology. Another model that's even much simpler is to say, ignore the whole concept of preferential attachment and just attach newly coming vertices uniformly at the previously appearing vertices. Now, that's not very realistic in the context of any of the data that we've looked at, but it does lead to some interesting mathematics, and both of these, in that, particularly in that latter case, you end up with max degree behaving only logarithmically in size. Let's see what else we have to say. So using the superstar model, it's preferential attachment with a twist. Turns out the differences are much larger than I expected them to be. It's easy to use and therefore easy to reject. You can look at some data and say, is there any chance that the superstar model is relevant? And one nice thing is when you can reject a model, it's pleasant. So you can find out that there exist circumstances where you would not say that it isn't feasible. It has the charm of being a one-parameter model, and the parameter there is trivial to estimate. Now, of course, if you were to stare into the pot any of the more complex variations on preferential attachment, then all of a sudden, not only would you have more parameters, but you would probably land yourself in the domain of things that were no longer analyzable. So there could be empirical benefits to the more elaborate preferential attachments in the second stage, but they won't come easily. But, you know, you always have that option if further parameters are needed. So thank you very much. And let me emphasize, I want to thank my two co-authors, members of the Twitter generation. They were a tremendous amount of help with this. Thank you. Well, that's interesting. A priori, you might. I'm sure it can be, but we didn't think about that. The obvious attempt is to introduce three colors, and then say red, green, and purple, as in the states. So you could map the red and the purple to the putative superstar 1, superstar 2. You'd have two parameters to estimate. But then you've got this idea of what's the proper analog to, I guess you would then be all of, you'd still stick with blue, and then it would be preferential attachment on the non-superstar. So that looks like it would work. And that's interesting because although we didn't actually see any examples, even in the Lady Gaga example where Justin Bieber and Kim Kardashian were quite large, those were still large in a way that was compatible with the basic superstar model. So we haven't seen that phenomenon, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Good question. Interesting.
So the regular preferential attachment model has a parallel zone 3.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a pity because it's only one parameter, whereas in real data, you tend to see lots of different estimates, at least, for
yeah.
the power law exponent. Now, it's very easy in a preferential attachment model to change the power by adding a little constant to the attachment scheme,
yeah.
making it affine rather than linear.
Yeah.
You could do that here, too. You give you two parameters, and you would, I mean, it would disentangle the probability of the superstar with the power law exponent. Have you tried to analyze
it? Yes, we did that. That actually is in the paper. Okay. So we've got that one. The same analysis does work. We called it linear, but affine is more appropriate because you're adding something to the thing. But we did do that one. And the same, it has that same very pleasant arithmetic that the preferential attachment model has. Now, what we didn't do was then revisit the empirical examples to see if we could really tune up the fit using that second parameter, but that'd be very interesting.
I guess your data sets are relatively small.
Yes, here's an interesting factoid. Twitter evidently provided the entire Twitter data set to agencies of the federal government for their purposes. And as of today, they've stopped doing that. So, you know, getting access to the absolute full feed is not necessarily easy at this point. This data was available for a special window. It was given by Facebook to Microsoft Research, and Microsoft Research made that accessible to subsets of researchers.
Attachment models where you attach the probability, it is not linear with the degree, but the degree to some power, where you can have that the maximum degree grows linearly with the total.
Oh, is that right?
I think so. So.
Yeah, I knew that there were non-linear and non-affine variations on preferential attachment, but I didn't know that any of them had a vertex which actually grew linear. So that's an interesting piece of literature that I wasn't familiar with.
This is a paper by Joel Spencer and Roberto Olivier. Well, you can ask Joel.
Okay, I'll ask Joel. Yes, he will. Thank you.